This is the American Ag Network Week in Review for the week of October 20th. I'm Sabrina Hill. Coming up in a little bit, we hear from a new team member at the American Seed Trade Association. But first, Rusty Halverson has this week's update on trade issues and storage space as the nation's grain harvest advances.
The White House has launched talks with the EU, Britain, and Japan on trade as the president looks to expand his America First trade policy. Pundits say the White House is trying to send a message to Congress. They want to wheel and deal with those countries, even as the White House digs in its heels with China. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said he's pushing for a summit between President Trump and China's president to address the trade tensions between the two countries. The plan to get Trump in a room with President Xi Jinping, get a small win, and declare an end to the whole thing. U.S. oil exports to China have slowed to a trickle amid the trade spat. China was the biggest buyer of U.S. crude oil in the first half of this year. But in August, U.S. crude exports to China, the world's largest oil importer, fell to zero, according to tanker tracking data surveyed by the Wall Street Journal. Meanwhile, the Commerce Department has opened an investigation into whether mattresses imported from China are being sold in the U.S. below fair value. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says the EU is moving too slowly in trade talks. He told reporters in Brussels this week that we need tangible progress. The president's patience is not unlimited, according to Ross. USDA will pay out more than $4.8 billion this year to farmers enrolled in its federal safety net and conservation programs. That, according to Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue. Producers confronting hurricanes, wildfires, drought, floods, even lava flows, and, of course, trade wars, too. Farm Service Agency Administrator Richard Fordyce on the White House's ag trade package so far.
About 97,000 applications for MFP. And so, you know, we've got to remember that those are certainly crop commodities, but they're also hogs and dairy, and a couple of new ones added, sweet cherries and shelled almonds. So almost 100,000 applications at this point. So we are getting close to $300 million as of today. That number is close to $300 million. But again, as we think about kind of what are the activities going to be, if you think about the Midwest and some of the weather constraints that we've had there, you know, the last couple of weeks, it's really slowed harvest. And then some of the other issues that, you know, from a storage or a market, market access problem has slowed harvest just a little bit.
Qualifying for the program and signing up is fairly easy to do.
So a producer really just needs to come in on depending on the commodity that they are participating in, a number of for production. So obviously for crops it's going to be bushels, hogs it's going to be number of head, dairy it's hundredweight, and so they need to bring in that production, that number. Now, as far as certification, we also will need to know during a spot check. And we're going to spot check some of these applications, how they are going to prove that. And so whether that's scale tickets, settlement sheets, you can also use the combine yield monitor, for example, to prove production. So so the producer will also have to have their what records they're going to use to prove production.
Grain buyers from 37 countries are in the U.S. this month participating in the Export Exchange hosted by the U.S. Grains Council, Renewable Fuels Association, and Growth Energy. U.S. Grains Council CEO Tom Slate.
Sort of our highlight event, really where we bring buyers from all over the world, way over 200 buyers. We have a very aggressive group coming here at the Export Exchange this time around. We put buyers and sellers together where the business gets done. There's always a little bit of a buzz around, surrounding these rooms as there's a lot of deal making going on. For us, this is really why we do what we do, is again culminate our activities, getting these buyers in the United States, getting them together in Minneapolis, but also going out to the harvest, seeing what the harvest is doing in the States. It's a great activity for us, and we're hoping to see a lot of business done.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Grains Council, pleased with the recently announced U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
You know, we had a sheet of goals that we submitted to the administration, what we'd like to see in the new agreement. And when we checked our list here after the final agreement, we got 95% of what we asked for in that agreement. So, yeah, I mean, we're really pleased. The essential element, which was do no harm to coarse grain exports, that was certainly done. And so we're really pleased that we're able to, you know, resume business as usual with our partners, our key partners in Mexico and Canada as well.
The pre- and post-event tours for the Export Exchange included three teams from Mexico, two visiting states before the Export Exchange, one visiting after. That event wraps up this coming week. U.S. pork, in some cases, is up to 70% more expensive in China than a few months ago due to China's retaliatory tariffs. The U.S. pork industry is on track to produce a record amount of meat this year. European and South American producers are said to be enjoying a bump in sales to China, lifted by China's tariffs on U.S.-produced pork. On Wednesday, the EPA released a 2018 fall agenda. Included is the EPA's plan to release a proposed E15 rule by February of 2019. By March, EPA set to finalize a first rule to revert the waters of the U.S. definition back to pre-2015. Meanwhile, the EPA saying it's putting off for at least a year any final announcement on a controversial proposal overhauling how the agency evaluates science. Critics say it could bar the use of landmark public health studies. Storage space is expected to be at a premium in the Western Corn Belt this harvest. Steve Nicholson with Rabo Research.
You know, a year ago, and I'll say December 1 stocks, and we get that, you know, grain storage numbers, we had 71-72% capacity utilization of all storage, both on-farm and off-stored, off-farm a year ago. So there's no reason to believe that number is not going to be higher this coming year. And you start looking at, you know, Illinois, you look at Iowa, you look at Minnesota, you know, those states, you know, their capacity utilization on storage a year ago was, you know, up in the upper 80 percentile. So, you know, big numbers. And so this is the kind of the silver line that this harvest has got drug out, because that stuff now we get to maybe get move some of this into some channels that would help free up some of that storage.
The premium in storage space will come at a premium in prices.
I've heard this anecdotally, and I would be interested, you know, what people are thinking or what they're hearing out there. We hear that, you know, the storage costs, in the sense of what is an on-farm storage facility going to cost you this year, is going to be up pretty substantially from a year ago. And I've heard some cases as much as, you know, double what it was a year ago. So those are some pretty scary numbers to think about. If you paid 3 and 4 or 5 cents a bushel last year per month for storage, you know, you talk about 8 to 9 cents a bushel this year. That's a pretty hefty increase. And that's the other thing to think about from a marketing perspective. Boy, you can't stomach a lot of storage off-farm very long, because it's going to erode the value of that crop pretty quickly.
And U.S. safety regulators are trying to figure out why the power tailgates on some Ford F-Series pickup trucks can open unexpectedly while the trucks are moving. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration opening an investigation into F-250 and F-350 Super Duty trucks from the 2017 model year. I'm Rusty Halverson.
There's a new team member on board at the American Seed Trade Association. I talked with Abigail Struxness about her position and the importance of trade in the seed industry. Abigail, you are the new Senior Director of International Programs and Policy with the American Seed Trade Association. That is quite a title. Why don't you tell us what this new role is that you're going to be doing?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be on. This is day five on the job for me, and I'll be managing the international programs for the American Seed Trade Association. We have grant funding. We're a cooperator with USDA through their market access program, as well as their foreign market development program. We've been participating in these programs since the 1960s. And through those grants, as well as a industry matching program with the private sector, we engage with international seed associations. We work on breaking down market access barriers, such as phytosanitary issues and intellectual property rights, and represent the American seed industry abroad.
All right, so as you mentioned, you are really within just the first few days on this job, but you actually have quite a strong trade background working with other organizations. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've done before this?
Sure. Well, I'm originally from Oregon, which is the grass seed capital of the world. So I have a little bit of a seed connection from there, but I've spent the last 5 years working at the Agriculture Transportation Coalition here in Washington, D.C., and through that association, we represented American exporters from all over the country and all commodities, basically dealing with transportation issues from the farms here in the U.S. to the foreign markets. So in that role, I dealt with market access issues, issues with the ports and with customs, helping U.S. exporters get their products competitively and efficiently over to those foreign markets. And before that, I spent some time at the Washington International Trade Association, as well as the state of Oregon's Business Oregon International Trade Department.
All right. So we do a lot of stories on trade, and we talk a lot about trade. But I have to tell you, when we're thinking about trade, the seed industry isn't always what comes to mind first for some of us. But, you know, I guess just like any other agricultural industry, of course, trade is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. Seeds can cross up to six borders before they're being planted by a farmer. So the supply chain is really unique and complex for our industry, you know, whether it's related to getting small batches over to a new country for research purposes, or whether it's, you know, for special seed treatments. You know, our products are crossing into different countries all the time. So, you know, for that, it means that trade is always going to be at the forefront. And we're here at an exciting time with trade. I mean, just yesterday we heard that there's going to be the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and we're still looking at the details in the agreement right now, but we were pleased to see that there's support in the agreement for agriculture biotechnology and new plant breeding methods and sanitary and phytosanitary regulations, as well as intellectual property protections, which are critical for, you know, folks who are moving their products into those key markets, which Canada and Mexico certainly are for the U.S. seed industry.
So you mentioned some USDA program funding, and I guess that I would say that also with that, that means that you also at the organization need to keep a close eye on the farm bill as well. Again, you're a few days into the job, so we won't get too deep into this, but is this also something that you'll be keeping an eye on?
Absolutely, and we've been supportive, and I know my colleagues over the past several months have been very supportive of continuously funding these USDA programs, which are in the Farm Bill. As we know, that hasn't passed yet, but that is something we're going to be continuously pushing for in this Farm Bill and future Farm Bills.
So I want to ask you, what are some of the things that you're most excited about as you come into this new position?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the U.S. seed industry is uniquely positioned in a lot of respects as a leader, as an international leader. And, you know, just from my past couple of days here, I've gotten a chance to meet with our International Executive Committee, and I was just really impressed by the breadth of representation that our members have on the international stage, whether that's working with you know, various international seed associations, regional seed associations, representation at the OECD. And so I'm really excited to kind of continue that collaboration and the diplomacy that, you know, representing the United States on a global stage will have.
What are some of the challenges that you think you may face, or that this position itself faces? What kind of challenges do we have when we're trying to market American seeds in other areas?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that you know, we've really been pushing, and I think I will have a role in moving forward, are these phytosanitary barriers. So making sure that, you know, countries are allowing for the access of U.S. seed, you know, based on scientific measures and a sound understanding of science and international regulations, and ensuring, you know, fair access for our members. And we see that play out in a variety of different countries, and that's always been a priority, is to make sure that we have fair access and eliminate some of those non-tariff barriers.
All right, Abigail, thank you for taking some time out of your day and your busy schedule as you're getting acclimated there to talk with us.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Abigail Strexness with the American Seed Trade Association. This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.